Roundtable Osteuropa. Ein Podcast des Zentrums für Osteuropa und internationale Studien.
Hello from Zeus. We are here with a new episode of our podcast Roundtable Osteuropa. Today we want to address one of the bases of research in political and social sciences, but also in the humanities, and that is data, or better, the access to data. We are living in times where data seems to be everywhere. In every discussion, we are just one click away from having a table or something else. And we leave data, especially digital data, everywhere. And as scientists, we have more and more data to analyze. But on the other hand, access to data becomes more restricted. All countries now have data protection, that is, privacy protection laws. And we also see developments in authoritarian countries that make it harder and harder to access data in their countries or about their countries. And we see that data, especially false data, can be used as a weapon. In today's podcast, we are talking with two colleagues. I am welcoming Felix Herrmann and Ivaj Ludinev. Felix Herrmann belongs to the Research Center of East European Studies at the University of Bremen. And you belong to Discuss Data, a platform that is archiving, sharing, and discussing research data on Eastern Europe, the South Caucasus, and Central Asia. And I'm welcoming my colleague from Zeus, Ivaj Ludinev, Ivo in short, who is a political scientist and postdoctoral researcher at Zeus. You also coordinate the multi-method data laboratory of the ConCoop Research Network. My name is Kerstin Bischel. I'm the academic coordinator of the ConCoop network here at Zeus. And we are sitting here in the context of CodaNet Ost, which is a project that aims to build a collaborative data network with Eastern Europe. All information in the show notes of the podcast. Let's start with our guest, Felix. Why do we actually need data storages, data platforms, or data catalogs with a special focus on Eastern Europe?
Yes, thank you for inviting me here. And I would like to start with a story. I'm a historian by training and computer scientist, so it makes sense from my point of view. When we were thinking about starting a data platform for our area, that meaning Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and the Southern Caucasus, we did that a few years back. So we started at around 2015 to think about that. And the original idea came up during a conference in the Caucasus region, where several of our of the people at the conference expressed doubts that they will be able to store and the data they were collecting about the countries in the region for a longer term because of a rising pressure from governmental organs, from within the science frameworks in these countries because of an authoritarian pressure. So these people ask their partners in other countries, and amongst them at Bremen, to help them with this task by creating a new platform. And long story short, this platform never saw the light of day because we weren't able to acquire the funding for that. And it became, in a sense, the predecessor of the Discuss Data platform we now have. But at this time, it did not happen. But what did happen instead? Several of the institutions who were asking us for help and support were disbanded a few years after that. And the data they had collected, it just got lost. Yeah, maybe it is still there on some hard disk of some researcher, but it was never in a structural way collected, published, made accessible for research. And that, of course, it points to the core of the problem. If you do not have infrastructures to store data, it will be lost at some point because data is fluid, it can be deleted, you can make lots of copies, but if you cannot publish them in a structural way where it's actually, where it can be found by other colleagues from within the same field, then the percentage of data which will be lost forever is pretty high.
I will start with two options, let's say. Why we need these data storages, data catalogs. The first is the fragmentation of data, the fragmentation of research. I think there is in the recent years a lot of very good high-quality research about Eastern Europe and from Eastern Europe, but it's fragmented around different research institutions, individual researchers, and it will be good to have more places, infrastructures where, in a good way, centralization appear by meaning places where researchers, policy makers, journalists, citizens can find more information about the region in one place. And the other answer is, I think still we have a kind of inequality in research production. Still, visibility of East European studies and research not only explaining what is Eastern Europe, but theories and data coming from Eastern Europe, it's out there. We know that there are a lot of reasons. For example, research is well-funded in Western Europe compared to Eastern Europe. Still, research coming from Eastern Europe, it's less visible in high-ranking journals. And having networks, collaborations, infrastructures, platform, catalogs, where this inequality is overcome, it will be very good for both learning not only about the processes in Eastern Europe, but from Eastern Europe. And I'm really happy about this project that you already mentioned, CodeNet Host, CONCOP also, Discourse Data. These are all initiatives that strengthen research in Eastern Europe, in Western Europe, about Eastern Europe. So it's overcoming this inequality that has a long history, very long.
Mm-hmm. So you both pointed to the relationships we as scientists have to Eastern Europe. Ivo, you have an Eastern European origin, but I would ask you once more, also for our listeners, maybe you explain a little bit more what your projects are actually doing. We have heard now a lot of the origin of the projects and the motivation, but what are you actually doing also in maybe comparing the two projects you are heading with each other? Let's start with Felix.
Yes, and our project Discuss Data is exactly about the point Ivo just raised. It's about overcoming the fragmentation of data. So usually you have research data stored at a variety of places. You have institutional repositories, if you're lucky. Usually, research data is not necessarily published all the time, so it just stays on the desk of a researcher, on a hard disk, and sometimes data is published on a huge data repository like Harvard Dataverse or Zenodo or some of these huge infrastructures, where it also cannot be found. It can be found, but you must already know what you are looking for. So Discuss Data tries to overcome that. It wants to create, or it did create, a virtual communication space for people working on data about Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and the Southern Caucasus. So what it tries to become an entry point into the world of Eastern European data. And it does so in, yes, providing a web user interface, a web platform, which should not feel like an archival catalog, which are pretty dull. I mean, it provides a very similar structure, right, and a functionality, but it tries to inject into this some user interface elements we know from working with social media. So you can follow other researchers who work on similar topics like you. You publish your data by uploading files. You can notify other users and the like. So we thought that this would be an approach to make research data more interesting, because all the problems around research data, they are around for a very long time, because the internet did not become popular only yesterday, but in several disciplines which are important for our user base, data is still treated as this super new thing, right? Especially historians, they just found out about data, they had sources, now they have data and they're still a bit confused. Political scientists are quite different, and social scientists, they already have an idea of data, which sometimes differs from the IT standpoint, but it's close enough. And we try to address all these different groups of researchers, also of activists, of interested members of the public, to publish data they have, to download data there, to discuss about data, thus the name Discuss Data. And the most important part in this thing will be the sustainability. So we have a project-based funding, as a lot of projects have nowadays in academia. So we had 3 years, and then we had a pause of a few years, and we had an additional number of 3 years. But of course, the platform should be there to stay. But what we now see when we especially, and we do not need to look at authoritarian contexts in Eastern Europe or in the Caucasus region, we can have a look at the USA, where now big academic players are facing huge challenges where we do not know if they will be around in the next years. So mm-hmm. We need to do something fast.
Okay, so there we are already a little bit in the question of challenges. Nevertheless, Ivo, what are you doing in the data lab of ConCorp?
Yeah, firstly, to say about the Discuss Data, that I think it's really great platform. I also, you mentioned in my biography that I have this in my dissertation, Comparative Research of Bulgaria, Slovenia, Protest Event Data. And I'm thinking to upload actually my data in Discuss Data platform. It's really great about research coming from Eastern Europe and about Eastern Europe. About my project, generally, I'm trying to, within the ConCorp project, to create several platforms where data become more visible. The one database is the so-called Catalog of Conflict and Cooperation Datasets. It was recently published, the second version, with around 170 datasets about conflict, cooperation, peace negotiation, political parties, elections, public opinion research. And the aim is to have this information of research knowledge, of increasing research knowledge, and publication of data sets publicly in online and within different research websites. So it's trying to link this research in one platform. The second database is about protest event data about Eastern Europe, Central Asia, South Caucasus, where 52 data sets visualize and describe. This is also a more specific database focused on protest movements and protest mobilization. It also tried to, in one platform, to showcase and connect this research that is fragmented within individual researchers or research networks. And the third sub project within the general aim is the Data Lab block, where different methodologies and research paradigms are discussed by researchers who study Eastern Europe. And here the idea is to have a place where questions about new or traditional methods, data collections, research ethics, a question about how we actually study, so ontological, epistemological questions, epistemic, how we study, what we study in Eastern Europe, are discussed by researchers both from East and West. So it's in these three directions.
Mm-hmm. Since Discuss Data is the older project, in quotations marks, I would like to ask one specific question for Felix now. And this is about the development of Discuss Data. You already said there was this beginning at a conference where this idea came up. Then you said there was for a long time nothing. Then the data get lost. But then you somehow started. Maybe you can a little bit tell us about how it started. And then, have there been major milestones, or did you have to do major changes to the project when reacting to certain events or developments outside of the project?
Yes, thank you for this question. What we did after our proposal for original funding got rejected, I mean, that happens all the time, so we can deal with that. But we still tried to find some way to make this project happen. So we had a series of workshops about protest events of the Bolotnaya Ploshchad, of the protest wave which hit Russia in 2010. And where we had already a community of like-minded people from several countries who were meeting, who had collected data, interviews, images, and who were in need of some place where to put the data so it will not be lost or forgotten or whatever. So that's when we started to create the platform. It was for a very small task to give those people a place for their very specific protest data. And this became the core of the later Discuss Data project. So we then were able to attract funding. We got a very generous funding from the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft. And we could start together with our project partners from the state and university library in Göttingen, and we could create a bigger project out of that. So that's how it all then began to become real. And we never had this huge breaking change we need to apply, but nevertheless, it was a very tedious process, where we had, in a very experimental way, tried to do that. Because what we did not do was to assume, okay, we are the experts in data, maybe in organization in data, like we are from the university library, we know how to do this. But we tried to involve the actual researchers, because the main rationale behind that and behind Discuss Data in general was they know their data best, and they also know best about all the challenges which come with this data, right? The context of the data is important. Specific metadata need to be there or you cannot use them properly. So we tried to include the researchers in this process. All the project members are also working with data in the one way or the other as researchers. So that really helped. And we made constant changes. And of course, during the COVID pandemic, we saw an uptake because people were sitting at home. They were not able to do a lot of research. So what did they do? They looked on their hard disk, what data do I have? And they made this data ready for publication. So it's no coincidence that we launched the platform during in 2019 or 2020 during the pandemic when it was needed most. And it's still, we see a lot of individual researchers, but also institutions have a strong interest in publishing the data with us and contact us frequently. So we have an idea. It's not completely wrong what we were thinking about that. And we made a lot of changes in the development process. And we think we are nearing a certain point where it's quite usable as a platform.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. For Ivo, since you are combining both perspectives, on the one hand, you have the background as a Bulgarian political scientist. On the one hand, you are now working at ZEUS, which is a German research institution. Would you say your project or also other projects like Discuss Data responds to the needs of Eastern Europe or the scientists from Eastern Europe or especially Southeastern Europe in your case? Or would you say there is no geographical difference?
I think I do have quantitative data of meta-analysis to mention how it's whether still there is disparity between East and West research-based or origin. But I think talking with the colleagues from Eastern Europe, either based in West or East, there is a need for increasing visibility of the region, not only as a place of where conflicts, wars, but also a place where other phenomena and processes appear. For example, one of the projects that I have about protease event datasets, which is more about meta information, so description about these datasets, authors and time period coverage, countries covered. It's aimed to increase this visibility of the research about the region, about this phenomenon, protest mobilization. On the other hand, I have also individual project about protest waves in the Balkan area, which is in the final stage. In the next several weeks will be published, I hope, in CONCOP website, where I aim to cover in a very long 40 years period the major protest waves in Southeast Europe, because we don't have such information. As I mentioned in the beginning, we have fragmentation of data, and in this specific topic, for example, in the past there were a project about protest mobilization in Serbia and Croatia, my project about Bulgaria and Slovenia, and there is some coverage, but in a very small period of time, of other countries in the region, but there is no data about the whole region in a more long-term historical period. And I think this is very important, because if you look on the recent news from the region, just to mention like what is happening in the last 4 months in Serbia, what is happening also in a neighboring country, so we can mention Slovakia, Georgia, in the whole region again there is some people also speak about a new spring of protest mobilization against corruption, against authoritarian governments. I think the region can be also not only, when we speak about the region, we know terms like Balkanization, they come in the 40s, in the 90s because of the Balkan Wars. But still the region is, when we speak and when the world look on the region, is mainly about wars, conflicts, corruption, influence of oligarchs in the political system. I think we can look also on the hope side. There are a lot of reason to hope and to see processes that give hope for the, not only for the region, but for the whole world. For example, the Serbian protest students are organized very democratically. They have general assemblies, they call them plenums, in a times where everywhere in the world authoritarian tendencies increase. So I think in through these data sets of protest waves in the regions, I can also try to show us some processes that can be hope for everywhere in the world. I think this interpretation of the regions always influenced by corruption, it's only the one side. I think the people in this region, they have very strong power, and they show that in practice, and we can talk more about this in research. And actually, by these examples in practice, to have new theories about our our world in social science, in political science.
Okay. Thank you very much. In my last question, I would like to look a little bit into the future. You both already mentioned different challenges. They were always part of your project, but nevertheless, I would use my last question to a little bit dig down more into the major challenges you may see for the future. And I would direct your answers in regard to international collaboration. What could be major challenges there? Maybe also into the direction of your work at a German research institution. But also one direction for major challenges could be research ethics, which are, of course, a big topic in international collaboration in the German academia, but maybe also in the practical ways we deal with data. For the last question, I would switch and start with Ivo this time.
I was thinking about the challenges, I think, connecting to the previous questions and my answer. What is true, what is not? We are in a period of so much information everywhere, and also losing the legitimacy of what is actually the legitimacy provider of facts, of truth. Like we in a transformative moment with social media, with so much information, it's very different to everything we know about the past, where information and facts coming from state institutions, and that's it. Like in the just 30 years ago, what is in the newspaper, most of the people we perceive as the truth. Now we have so much information providers and interpreters everywhere. Like one influencer in social media is similar as an impact on society to a newspaper. So one of the challenges is actually to understand in so much information from everywhere, what is true, what is false, interpretation of facts. One example, as I mentioned, the Serbian protests in Belgrade in 15 March happened the largest protest probably in the last 30 years in this country. And a huge discussion appeared in the whole society in Serbia, but also in the Balkan region, how many people protested actually. This is a question not just of facts, but legitimacy and power. Mm-hmm. It's between power dynamics, between who say what is true, what is false, and then this reflects to the whole political system. Because if the information is about, of let's say, 20,000 people, this is not so much. This is, let's say, a normal protest. But if the information is about 500,000 in a country with 6 million citizens, this is a lot. This is comparatively like, I don't know, for maybe for Germany, 20 million to be on the street. So in this case, for example, state institution say in the media around 100,000 people. Non-governmental organization that is trying to count protesters using drone, video, images, photographies, they say that the protesters were around 275 to 225,000 people. And oppositional media and protesters say that there were at least 500,000 people in Belgrade protesting. And this is a huge problem, but this is just one example. We have this everywhere, and the aim of the researcher is to look on and to be open, how they collect data, how they, what are the methods, what are the techniques of data collection, and how they interpret the data. And our role is such conflict issues, in such issues that are very important to society, to help audience. And in this case, for example, this non-government organization, they are very open. They have in their webpage information how they use AI system, for example, software, to count protesters, what images are used, and so on. This is one of the challenges. Many information, authority of information provider, it's to some extent equal. People in recently public opinion service, I saw that, I think it's same in Germany, but also in Balkan area. Young generation are receiving news from social media. And TikTok, YouTube disappear are most important than traditional media. So this is another challenge.
Okay, thank you very much. Felix.
Yes, I have a twofold answer here. I want to raise some hope, right? Because mm-hmm. we have this abundance of information. We are also facing, as researchers, we have social media, we have authoritarian contexts, we have mm-hmm. state data, which cannot necessarily be trusted, but raises the questions, could it ever be trusted, right? And I just want to point out one small example from Russia, where we are pretty sure state data cannot always be trusted, especially in war times, where where we heard a lot of information and we are pretty sure a lot of it is propaganda. And then we have some very small collective of researchers or individual researchers, like our colleagues from the public sociology lab, small network of researchers. And some of their members, they went into Russian regions and it took interviews about the perception of the war with ordinary people. And that provides unique data, which is in conflict with the official narratives there. And when we have that, we can contradict it with other with data from official sources, from other sources. And I think that's a huge plus for research. So there is still a lot that you can do. And it's our job as researchers to use this data and our job as data managers to help to make this data findable and accessible. And the other part of my answer is about German research institutions and challenges. And the good thing about Germany is, and everyone knows this who is working on our region, is that we are still pretty well financed, right? If you compare it to other countries. And so we have some resources to work with. Nonetheless, of course, we also have economic crisis. We have ideas of cutting down funding for research. So we also need to deal with that. And that brings me again back to sustainability, how to make these infrastructures sustainable. The usual model in academic financing is you have a research topic, you do your research, you publish a book, an article, whatever, right? And then the project is done. If you publish something digital, you have to sustain it for years to come. And we do not have a model there yet for this kind of research. And the reactions I see are big projects like the National Data Research Infrastructure here in Germany, NFDE, where you have these big projects which do not work well with small disciplines like the study of Eastern Europe. So what I would opt for, what I see as a great challenge, is to find a way for the infrastructures we shape. I think we should shape them. That's super important that researchers are getting involved in managing their own research data, and that we take also at least a small part in this bigger discussion by showing that we have approaches which work quite well, which do not need a huge amount of resources, but still they need some to work. And then we have something to offer also on a global scale, and I think that's super important, because when we think about the area of studies, Eastern Europe, Caucasus, Central Asia, it's an international discipline, right? We do not need a small German part of that. We need everything, because only then it scales to a certain extent.
Okay. Thank you very much. I am a little bit positively surprised that our podcast, our discussion on data, included so much hope. Ivo, you made the point of learning from Eastern Europe, where we have so many data, even though it's fragmented. Felix, you made the point about challenging authoritarian propaganda by collecting and having data. And there was the point about making the contribution here count in an international scale. So this would be my three topics, or my major points I would take away with me. There was many more mentioned, so I hope our listeners also take something out of it with them. And yeah, I hope to, or I'm looking forward to collaborate with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.